I can give you more paper. I didn't bring you the whole ream. This is public radio, so I didn't want to bring it all to you.
Marginalia.
Notes in the margin of a book.
Notes, commentary, and similar material
Marginalia
written in the margin of a book.
Comments and notes which are incidental
or additional to the main topic.
The main topic in the margin of a book.
I would wager that for most of us, the only time we think about children's picture books is when we're begged to read just one more story. But have you ever thought about what goes into creating a picture book? How do authors and illustrators come together? What is the secret to creating images and stories that keep children enchanted and their adult readers charmed? I had a chance to discover a little more about the industry from the perspectives of an author and an illustrator. Beth Ferry is the author of 7 published books for kids, with 7 more in the works. Tom Lichtenheld is the author and or illustrator of 25 published titles. They stopped by the KMUW studios this week during their book tour for 10 Rules of the Birthday Wish, according to Beth Ferry and Tom Lichtenheld. After I handed Tom his requested paper and pencil so he could write and doodle as we talked, I got to ask Beth and Tom as many questions as I wanted in 30 minutes. I'm Beth Golay, this is Marginalia, and here's our conversation. So the book is 10 Rules of the Birthday Wish, according to Beth Ferry and Tom Lichtenheld. The text is copyrighted to you, Beth,
yes,
and the illustrations to Tom. So you're both storytellers using different methods, mm-hmm, but storytelling nonetheless. So in case listeners do not know, how does collaboration on a picture book work?
Normally, it really doesn't. Normally, there is no collaboration. Normally, the author writes the words wherever they are, and the illustrator draws the pictures wherever they are. But in this case, we actually did collaborate, and mainly on the phone. But, you know, there was a lot of sharing of ideas and pictures, which is very rare for an author, which is, you know, we're missing out. That's what I have to say. Like, it's just such a fun way to see how the illustrator takes your words and, you know, expresses them. And so normally you don't get to see the process. You just really see the end result. So for this book, because, you know, we worked on it before we submitted it, we did share a lot, you know, and we changed a lot based on feedback.
So when you pitched this to the publisher, it was as author-illustrator?
Yes.
Because typically, does it work where you are assigned an illustrator later?
Yes.
How does that work for you?
Typically, an author will write a manuscript, a publisher will buy it, and then the publisher will select an illustrator and send it to the illustrator. And they would rather not have the author terribly involved because they want the illustrator to bring their own voice to it and to interpret the words in their own fashion. So there is a, you know, fairly good reason that the publishers prefer that. But I have found over the years that I really enjoy collaboration. I enjoy that process. And with the right partner, it makes for a better product.
So as we mentioned before, this book outlines 10 rules of birthday wishing. So how did this specific story idea come to be?
The story idea came basically from, I was thinking about rules, and I must have been in a school and seen a sign about some type of rule, and it got me thinking about, I was a rule follower, some kids are rule followers, and some kids are rule breakers. And so when I was thinking about the idea of rules, I thought, what kind of rules does everybody want to follow? You know, are there rules? And so this is kind of where it led to, like, birthdays, and then wishes just seemed, you know, because it just does. There are very specific steps when you think about your birthday, and especially like closing your eyes and taking a big breath and blowing out all the candles. And it just led to, you know, because you want to get 10, you know, you kind of really don't want 3 rules, you know, so and this just seemed to like fit the bill. But it really started with, like, you know, there are so many rules. Kids are ruled by rules, and, you know, most of them break the rules at some point. And so this just was like a fun twist on, you know, the rule idea.
Well, and it feels like to me that birthday wish rules have always been there, always unspoken, and I'm glad you finally got them down on paper because,
just,
you know, you'll hear adults say, make a wish, and then they'll say, don't tell anybody.
Right.
So it is nice that we finally have the definitive.
Thank goodness. Just in case there's a question.
And ever since we started working on this, I mean, ever since I saw the manuscript, I have been very sensitive to those rules and seeing them played out in any movie, any kind of culture, and it's amazing how consistent they are across the board. No matter, you know, you'll see a foreign film and there's people having a birthday party and they go through the same steps with the closing of the eyes, and it's all, you know, fantasy,
right,
but somehow they all landed on a similar ritual. So I love that, you know, universal character of those rituals. And the magic won't happen unless you do A, B, and C.
Right.
And if you break one of those rules, it will, you know, lessen your chances of the magic happening.
That is so true. Do you have a favorite birthday rule?
That's a great question. I guess, you know, I love the picture of the pufferfish taking a big breath. So my rule is really ruled by the illustration. But in general, I think it's hard the older you get to blow out all the candles in one breath. So that might be my least favorite rule because it's really hard to do. And then you're like, oh, if I use two breaths, does it not come true?
And it doesn't.
It doesn't.
I think my favorite is closing of the eyes because think about what that means. Like you close your eyes so that you enter a different realm almost. You transport yourself into this world where anything can happen. If you don't close your eyes, you're too much in reality. When I hit that line, you must close your eyes, it really struck me. And I thought, wow, this is an opportunity to do something that, you know, gets your attention about that act of making the magic happen.
Well, you know what's funny? The illustration for closing your eyes is the simplest illustration in the book. It's just the eye that turns into a flower. And it's so simple, and there's so much white space, and yet it's so potent, I think. You know, so there's so much fun going on, and there's, like, antics, and yet that one illustration is so, I mean, stark and simple, and yet poignant, I think.
Did you have fun with illustrations? Because, I mean, I liked where you could put the hands down.
Right.
I liked, you know, when you blow out the light or any light.
Mm.
That was a fun spread.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun. And part of it was collaborating. You know, I would do sketches and send them to Beth and get feedback from her. And we'd try various things for various wishes. And then we gave it a dynamic. So there'll be, you know, busy, silly mayhem. And then that is broken by something that's simpler and more emotional. So it's got this kind of wave of emotion throughout. And then towards the end, we knew we wanted it to settle down into something more emotional. The biggest challenge was to not promise that your wish would come true. Number one, to not make wishes all for material things. And number two, not to promise that your wish would come true, but to make it about the magic of the wish itself. So the ending was particularly challenging, but also fun, a good challenge.
I think I read on your website that you have difficulty with the ends.
I'm particular about ends. Yeah, sometimes ends, you know, you'll have an idea and you'll get all the way up towards the end and you've got to wrap it up. You've got to wrap it up on the right note. And yeah, I do have difficulty, but when I am really stuck on a book I'm writing on my own, I'll ask my wife and she'll say, well, why don't you just do this? And, you know, I've been hammering away on it for 3 days and she just comes up to the studio and looks out the window and says, well, why don't you just do that? And it's perfect. Then she walks away, so, which is kind of maddening.
That's her job.
That's her job, yeah. But my thing about endings is that there's two kinds of endings. A book can end the way a dog sits down or lies down, which is a dog just kind of goes in a circle and then plops down. And it's not very elegant, but a cat will go in a circle and the circle will descend closer and closer to the floor until the point where they're laying down, but there's almost not a discernible difference between the cat standing and the cat lying down. And I like an ending that works like that, where you can hardly tell that you're being guided through this ending, and finally it's lying down.
Mm. That's cool.
That is beautiful. Can you give us a little background on, like, process, especially with regard to timeline of a book project? How long does each step usually take?
I think in terms of writing, there's no deadlines when you're writing because you're basically writing until you're satisfied. And so the first step is, I'm satisfied. And then you have to satisfy other people. So, you know, then the next step is satisfying your agent. And then the editor who acquires it. And then you do have to satisfy the illustrator because if they don't fall in love with your words, they're not going to illustrate it. They say, no, thank you. So you kind of know down the line you are satisfying lots of other people. So when I'm satisfied, I assume that everyone else will be too because I'm, you know, hard on my own work. Like I want it to be perfect as it can be. And, you know, the editor is there for a reason because they can always tweak. Because we kind of skipped the editor part, you know, it was like, you know, I'm satisfied, then my agent, and then we went directly to Tom. And we did so much tweaking, you know, that I normally probably wouldn't have done. You know, it would have probably been a different book if an editor had acquired it before Tom did sketches, because then we wouldn't have been talking. And the ending is so magical now, and it's so beautiful to fall asleep to. I probably would not have ended it that way without Tom.
I was going to ask if text dictates illustration,
But then I saw, like, I'm thinking about the little piece with the moose. Were you able to have a little bit of editorial fun with it as well?
Yeah, I'll throw in silliness like that just because I like to draw moose. and I was raised on Mad Magazine, which is all peripheral gags throughout. So I kind of like to throw that in. But text defines illustrations up to a limit. In other words, they shouldn't do the exact same thing. So if the text says, you know, Billy had to walk up the hill, I don't want to do a drawing of Billy walking up the hill because it's redundant. So the text should say, Billy faced a big challenge. And then the visual shows Billy standing at the bottom of the hill. So the two dovetail and one couldn't live without the other. To me, that's the ideal.
Now, this isn't the first book you've worked together on, right? Is it the second?
It's our second.
Okay. Does it get any easier the more books you do?
I do think it does because, you know, the first book, again, I didn't know Tom. I didn't even
Was he assigned to you?
He was assigned to me, yes, lucky me. And this is my first collaboration. Tom has had many collaborations before, but for me, it's so enjoyable because I understand why you don't work together, and especially a lot of times, you know, it's not possible either. But it changed in a way that was really surprising to me. And to see the process, because I think also, you know, there's a lot of work, but you don't realize how much art gets discarded. You know, he would send things and I'd be like, this is perfection. He'd be like, yeah, it's not going to make it in the book. You know, it is easier to cut words, I think, than art. You know, words, you know, as much as you do love your words, but, you know, you can cut a few and it's not killing you. But some of the art that we cut that he had done these drawings for, and I was like, wait a minute, this is, goes nowhere? It's really, you know, I think it's a lot harder. Am I wrong?
I don't have a hard time getting rid of it if I know that there's something better and that that drawing that gets thrown away was the path to the better thing.
Mm,
so to me, it's just part of the process.
From concept to completed book, what's the most difficult part for you of creating?
For me, it's endings and then getting the artwork to do what I want it to do, get it to submit. I mean, there's a certain point where I close the door and for 6 months I'm doing the paintings and the drawings. And I'm not a professionally trained illustrator, so for me, it's a process of throwing things at the paper until it behaves the way I want it to. And it never does because, you know, art is like that. The saying is no work of art is ever finished. It's only abandoned.
I think the same can be said for text because you can truly tweak a manuscript forever. You can go back and always find like one, you know, and it's hard to say like, okay, this is good. It's good. It can go and someone else can give me some feedback because, you know, you do, you strive for perfection and it's almost impossible, really. And even, I mean, I don't know, sometimes I look at other books, not this one or our first collaboration, but some other books that I've done and I'm like, oh, I wish I'd changed that. And it's already published and it's been approved by think about how many steps.
Right.
And yet when I'm reading it in front of kids, I'm like, oh, I wish that part was different, you know, and that's tough.
So you were in Wichita on a book tour, and you've been visiting classrooms and then an event at Watermark Books this evening. What's your favorite part of a book tour?
I think interacting with the kids in the schools and just seeing their response, getting their questions. You never know when you're going to get a brilliant question from a seven-year-old. You know, the other day, a little boy raised his hand, and he said, tell us about your childhood. And I said, wow, that is really insightful that he recognizes that in order to do this job, you have to probably have had a good childhood, but then have retained part of that. And I don't know if his thought process was that deep, but that's what it meant to me, was he recognized that need in an adult to be able to stay in touch with their inner child in order to do this job. So you never know what the kids are going to ask.
I think so much of our job is done in solitude, you know, writing. It's all very
solitary.
Yeah, it's solitary. Thank you. So when I read my books like in front of kids and you can see the joy, it just, you know, it really, it's hard to describe, but it's pretty awesome, you know, because really that's why you do it. And yet, you know, you're doing it alone, like reading it to your dog, like they don't, you know. So when you read it for the first time in front of kids and then, you know, they clap. I remember the very first book that I ever read was our book, Stick and Stone. And they like, I didn't expect them to clap. And I truly will never forget that. Like, I was like, oh, my God, they're clapping for my book. Like, so, yeah, sharing it. That's really the best part of creating
getting
a book,
the feedback.
Sharing
that
it
energizes you to keep doing it.
Yeah.
So tell me about your childhood. No.
I was like, that's pretty cool.
Okay, so I saw.
You know what's interesting about that is it's my first thought was you have to have had a a happy childhood to do this. But then I thought about an author-illustrator named David Small.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
He had a terrible childhood. He was, like, medically abused. And he turned that experience into a wonderful graphic novel. But he illustrates and writes beautiful picture books.
True.
So he transcended, you know, a not great childhood. And Marie Sundack did not have a wonderful childhood.
I saw on your individual websites that you have published quite a few books and have several more forthcoming. These questions are for each of you. You can do short answer, and I think we'll be able to distinguish your voices. How long have you been writing and or illustrating?
I started writing seriously in 2009. So, 9 years.
And I started in 2000. That's when my first book came out.
How many books that bear your name can we find in bookstores or libraries?
Well, it depends on who carries them.
I know. But if they had them all.
For me, right now, it's 7.
I think I have 25. It's hard to pin a number on it because they do versions of books, you know, board books and things like that. But I think, like, 25 original books will have my name on them.
How many book projects do you work on at a time?
I probably have 7 or 8 going at a time.
I will have 2 actively, one on my drawing board and one in sketch form, so that when I ship the art for the one that's on my drawing board, I have some job security in the next one that's in the wings.
How many rejection letters have you received during your career?
A lot. It's hard to count. Actually, I've never counted.
I keep them. I probably have 15 or 20.
Oh, Tom. I have more than that.
Well, don't forget, I don't write as many original books as you do.
Well,
I mostly illustrate.
Right, that's a good point. Right?
So,
any messages to those who have been receiving rejection letters through the years?
You know, I would say don't take it personally. Keep trying. Develop a portfolio. No publisher wants a one-shot author. They want a source of talent that they're going to be able to go back to and help develop. Join SCBWI and keep at it. And listen to your critics. Don't take it personally and keep at it.
And for me, it would be, you know, write a lot. You know, I think a lot of people, they write a story and they love it. And, you know, they think this is my story. And it's not always the story you think it's going to be. And so you can't just write one story. You have to write 20 stories. So, you know, you just have to keep coming up with new ideas. Never sit on your laurels either. Like, so even if you do get one, you have to think about the next one immediately. And so it's just always like, you know, try to find ideas wherever you can and write as much as you can.
Okay, the book is 10 Rules of the Birthday Wish, according to Beth Ferry and Tom Lichtenheld. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
That was Beth Ferry and Tom Lichtenheld, author and illustrator of 10 Rules of the Birthday Wish, which was published by Putnam. This episode was recorded at KMUW Studios. I was hopeful that Tom would leave that doodle sheet with me, but alas, I didn't even get to see it. Thanks for joining us for Marginalia. Discover more episodes at kmuw.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Marginalia is produced at KMUW Wichita. Our engineers are Torin Anderson and Mark Statzer. Our editors are Luann Stevens and Haley Krausen, and I am the producer. This is Marginalia, and for KMUW, I'm Beth Golay.